Hello and welcome to episode the 261st of the internet's one and only podcast about comic books, your only source for comic book news and reviews. Not really news. You are listening to the Comics Podcast. I am your host, Jean-Luc. As always, Chad is here.
Howdy.
And Emily 2.0, also here.
We talk about news sometimes.
Very rarely. But I mean, as the only comics podcast, I guess we are the only source for it. The only way you would get comics.
Where else
news.
Are you going to go? There aren't any other podcasts.
Exactly. We are, unfortunately...
We cornered the market.
Unfortunately, we had to dismiss Alex from the show. His sex appeal was just, we thought, too great for the context of this show, so we kicked him off. And
it's also unfortunate about all those racist tweets, and he got canceled.
Yeah, I mean, personally, they were from, like, 2011. I think he's moved on and grown since then, but can't risk it for the brand, so he got the boot. He's out. So, no more Alex. There will be
we'll
a new
all
Alex
have
next
a moment of silence.
I'll press F.
There will be a new Alex next week. We'll find a replacement and get him on the show. And, you know, have him audition by editing this episode.
I see. I like the sound of that.
See?
Is that I don't have to do it.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
It just benefits
all
of us.
Seems like a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, nobody recording this episode has to do it. Good vibes all around. The one person who's not here is going to have some bad vibes when some audio files show up in their inbox tomorrow morning. You know, just like you do. Don't tell your editor before sending them some audio files and be like, hey, edit this. But we're not here to talk about editing podcast audio, as exciting a topic as it may be. We're here to talk about some nerd shit, probably. I don't know what my co-host got up to this week. I didn't really get up to a whole lot, but how have your weeks been? What have you been up to?
Well, today I watched the first two of Netflix's Fear Street trilogy. It's a trilogy of slasher movies. Have either of you guys heard about these?
Yeah, I heard they were not very scary.
Oh, I mean, yeah, they're not scary, but, like, they're fun. And I don't know, like, John, I think you could potentially like these movies. They've got sort of a young adult vibe, even though I'm not sure these movies, some of the content is a little more mature than I would expect from what is normally considered young adult. Like, there's, like, a lot of drug use, and, like, there are a couple of times where you see just, like, literal full sex scenes. Like, you don't see, like, genitals, I guess, but, like,
damn,
people are definitely having sex on screen.
I feel
so,
like, young adults do a lot of drugs. I feel like that's
kind
of a staple of young adult movies, is some drugs.
And, yeah, maybe not necessarily the drugs, but, like, I don't know, and the, it seems like if this were coming out in theaters, this would be a little more than what is, just on the whole, the content may not hit the PG-13. It may be a little farther than that. But, like, I mean, yeah, I am having a good time. The girl, Sadie Sink from Stranger Things season, whatever the last one was, the redhead girl, she's in the second one, and she's
very good.
The one
with the cool brother?
Yeah, she's in it, and she's real good. The first one has a love story that I like a lot, so that's cool, I guess. I don't know. Like, they're just fun little slasher movies, and I think each one seems to get better than the one before it, even though I might like the first one a little more than the second one, just for, like, personal reasons, like, personal taste. But I think that some of the, like, kinks in the first one are worked out by the time they get to the second one, and I hear the third one is even better. I haven't watched it yet, because They're each movie's a little over 100 minutes in length, so like I just didn't have enough time to watch all three of them today. But I liked it. It's based on an R.L. Stine book series, I think, but I never read them.
Yeah, it is.
I don't know how it, given some of the stuff that happens, I don't know if it's necessarily like, I don't know how faithful this is, but I mean, yeah, movies are cute. I recommend.
Cool.
Like I said, slasher movies, so just a lot of like, there are some pretty gratuitous kills in these movies. Actually, that's also
okay. Like, let's fucking
should
go.
Be on the list of reasons that I think this is a little higher than a PG-13 is like. I don't want to spoil any of them in case you guys watch it because, like, you know, that takes the fun out of a slasher movie.
I wouldn't want the kills spoiled.
Yeah, but like there's one that I thought was like, oh, that's even maybe a little much for me, and I had to look away from part of the screen when they showed like what happened to the body part that was being mutilated.
Perfect. I'm back on board.
Yeah, I probably should have mentioned that ahead of time. Yeah, like there's like a whole lot of like blood and hacking and slashing in this movie. Yeah, it's fun. Like, not very scary, but, like, I don't know. Like, I don't really consider slasher movies that scary most of the time. Like, you know, people are gonna die. You just gotta figure out how.
Yeah, I feel like there's some that get there on actually being scary. But, yeah, I think
meant, like, in general.
I feel like the good ones are scary. Or, you know, the cream of the crop, I guess. I mean, there's some good ones that aren't. Like, I didn't find that last Halloween movie to be scary, but I thought it was pretty good. Yeah. So maybe I'll give these a shot.
Yeah.
I've seen some...
It's got kind of that young adult vibe, which I feel like you and I both enjoy in our entertainment.
Yeah, I was on that note, I was hoping to see Escape Room 2 Tournament of Champions before we recorded this episode. But I didn't get a chance to, so I'll report back on
that
next week.
That's unfortunate. Did you like the first Escape Room movie? I did not see it.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was a lot of fun. I mean, it's not really a horror movie.
Sure.
But it's kind of like a Saw movie, but with all the edge sort of, taken off. Which
yeah, I think I
just
heard
made
that.
For, which just made for a really fun kind of like... thriller, I guess, sci-fi thriller, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
It was really, I had a really good time with it. It's not amazing, but I enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to the sequel.
Nice.
Just based on that. And I've also heard some, like, really positive word of mouth. I know that, like, a lot of people had a similar response to the first one that I did, and a lot of those same people have been really high on the second one coming out of it. So, you know, I'm looking forward to going and seeing that. If I get the chance this week. But, yeah. Chad, what have you been up to?
I finished my Warhammers, my Necrons.
Woohoo! Oh,
yeah. I did that before we recorded. I was like, I'm going to listen to some music. I bought the new Illinium album. That's good. And now I'm gonna do all the glows on the weapons and the eyes. And then I'm not going to touch these guys ever again. So step one and two. Currently done.
I know I'm interrupting Chad's thing, but also the soundtrack in the Fear Street movies, that both of them has been very good. So that's just another thing to look forward to, Sean.
Yeah, I feel like I know that they take place in different years, so it's pretty.
Well, it's got like
an
orchestrated soundtrack with like mix of like they mix in some licensed songs, but not in a way that's like very obtrusive. In my opinion. So,
cool.
Anyway, back to Chad and your Warhammers. I'm very interested.
Chad, are you just putting the Warhammers on a shelf?
No, that's not a joke. I am interested in your Warhammers.
Yeah, they're just on my bookshelf right now. They're not even like. Displayed properly, I have to have them pushed kind of back because the cat likes to try and bat at them, and they're the one thing I really don't want them to play with because they've taken me a lot of time to finish. But the big excitement for finishing these ones is that I'm gonna throw away all my enamel paints, and when I get another batch, I'm gonna buy proper model paints that don't involve paint thinner to clean brushes or thin paints down. Because I'm so sick of that. Like, it was such an extra step. Whereas all of the glows and stuff on these, I used acrylics, just like shitty acrylics. But I, even using crap ass acrylics, I have to do like 4 coats to get them to stick properly. Still better than using the fucking enamel paints.
Well, you live and you learn, Chadley.
Yeah, this is what I get for being a cheap bastard, too, because the enamels, I could get a set of those for pretty. They're like $1 or $2 a paint pot versus like good acrylic paints for like $4 or $5 a paint pot. So I want to continue like properly basing all the models. Like these ones turned out really good because I have like the rock texture that they're standing on, and I think it adds a lot versus just the flat colored ones I've been doing. So,
well, that's
I'll have
cool.
to either buy things for that or, well, I'll probably go get like a fake plant and just cut it up and use that for like foliage texture, but I don't know. Well, it'll be a bit before I do more. I like to wait a few months just because like at towards the end of these, they kind of feel like work and that's not the point of them, but I am happy to be done with them. I think they turned out pretty good.
Cool.
What else have I been doing? Oh, I've been mixing music. I got a song done.
Yeah.
Yay!
Sounds pretty
that's
good.
Awesome.
So 4 more to go. I started the other one today. Now that I have all the presets for the drums and the bass and everything sorted, that'll save me a lot of time. But we'll have a new music this year.
Nice.
We love to hear that. Love to hear the ever-continuing creative life of Chad marches on.
My vocal coach did listen to the song I had done, and he thought it was pretty cool.
Nice.
Which made me feel good, because he's in a real band, and he writes real music, and I'm like, oh, I did it. I impressed a real one.
Senpai
you like
noticed
real
you.
Music. It's tangible. You can listen to it.
You can.
It exists in the world.
Oh, and then the other kind of thing I did is I did an interview in VR chat.
Yeah, this was a redo of an interview that you did previously, right?
Yeah, we did the first one, and I let him record everything and
Mistake.
Handle everything, and then he sent it to me, and I think his computer's probably a little worse than mine, and so we were in a place that I didn't think was that intensive, but apparently it was for him, and so the audio is really choppy, the video was kind of choppy, and I was like, yeah, I don't want to like release this is unpleasant to listen to, this is just not a good production. We were also really rushed because he had his kids and had to go, you know, put them to bed and whatnot, and so we only had like 15 minutes to set up and do it. So he was willing to redo it, and I was willing to redo it, and I set up the podcasting microphone I'm using now and put that on a mic stand, and then that was kind of funny because obviously you have the headset on, so I can't see it, and I know it's there somewhere. Every once in a while, I'm just like moving my hands around like I'm, you know, in a cave looking for a light switch or something. Not the right visual, probably, but you get the idea. So yeah, bump it into the microphone, and it was,
you know, those caves that famously have light switches.
Yeah, those fucking light switch caves, all the light switch bats. And that was kind of fun to do. I drank a bit before that too, because why not?
And, honestly, you probably benefited from doing it over like. Anytime I've had to unfortunately record a podcast over, the second time is always better because you've gotten like some of the pre-recording weirdness out of the way, and like you kind of know what you're feeling, what you're gonna say.
Yeah, because there was like things I specifically wanted to touch on in the second one, whereas the first one we winged pretty hard, and so
yeah.
it was extra rambly and not worth listening to, whereas the second one is like, no, I have notes, I don't have them written down, and even if I did, I couldn't see them because I got this headset on.
Yeah, I mean,
but
it's just a little tighter, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Yeah, it was fun. And that, it's one of those things where I'm just like, I don't want to share this too far because my VR chat avatar character is something I don't really feel like I want to explain to normal people.
What is it?
It's a cute little anime girl with like a dragon tail.
I'm surprised you didn't use the Habbo Hotel one.
Oh, Luna? I haven't used her in a bit.
For the listeners, that's not actually Habbo Hotel. I'm being glib. It's Hasbin Hotel.
Whatever. But yeah, I still have that one. I haven't used her in a while, mostly because her lip syncing's not as great, and she's kind of, I don't know, it's a little more derpy than the one.
That's what I always think of when I think of you doing VR chat.
I used that one for a really long time. Like there's a lot of screenshots of me with that with Luna as my avatar. Yeah. So like not, you know, not wrong, but.
I'm not gonna be here next week. I mentioned that in our group chat, but I figured I could say it.
What are you doing? What you got planned?
I'm gonna be at an anime convention.
Oh.
Yeah. Basically same as last time. I'm gonna be like selling at a booth, but this is an anime convention as opposed to a comic convention. And I'm pretty excited. This is it's called MechaCon. It's in New Orleans. It's been going on for a few years. I've been going to this one for the past few years, and this is the last one. They're not going to be doing any MechaCons after this. It was supposed to be last year was the last MechaCon, but I mean, we all know how that turned out. So, they had to push to this year, and, I'm excited. I like MechaCon.
I think
it's in a cool hotel.
I think Mega 64 go to that one.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, I feel like I recognize the name of that, and I'm trying to think of why. And the only reason why it has is I would say I think they go to that one.
I don't know, maybe.
That's cool.
I mostly stay at my booth, so like if there are important people there, I probably wouldn't know.
Fair.
Although I guess important is a relative term when it comes to conventions.
Yeah, and you know, podcast hosts and stuff like that. Though Mega 64 are known for lots of stuff, but yeah, that sounds fun. I've never been to a convention. Doubt I'll ever go to. Well, actually, I'm going to a screen printing convention next week.
That's not a convention. Like work conventions are different from nerd conventions.
I'm sure. I'm kind of excited just for the thing I'm getting paid to do it, but also
that's always a plus.
I've never been to anything like this. I was told by someone who's being forced to go, who doesn't want to go, to keep my expectations kind of low because it's a work thing. The email I got was like, we encourage people to dress business casual. And I'm just like, oh, band shirt and shorts, motherfucker. I don't care about impressing any of these people. I don't work with them.
Oh, well, I hope you have fun, Chad.
I do, too. If nothing else, like, I'll probably meet people I've talked to on the phone as far as, like, buying stuff from. Like, I know Matt from Zund is going to be there, so I'll probably go say hi to him. But, yeah, it'll be neat. And then the
shout
day
out
after,
to Matt from Zund.
Yeah, hey, Matt from Zund. Your Swedish cutters are pretty cool. Going to have one of those in 10 to 14 weeks because they take forever to build. And then they have to ship.
You know they've got anime conventions in Minnesota, right, Chad?
Yeah, but I don't like driving, and I'd have to go to the Twin Cities for that shit.
Yeah, there's one this year in Plymouth, Minnesota, and then next year in Minneapolis.
Like, I can barely get my ass to go to Minneapolis for a concert I want to see. I'm definitely not going to go for anime.
Oh, but it's fun.
Anime's
you know
bad, though.
Okay, you know what you would probably have had fun at, though, is, like, I know brony conventions are, like, not really a thing that happens anymore for, like, good reason. But,
yeah.
Like, brony conventions were super fun. I used to go to Nightmare Nights Dallas. I went for, like, 3 or 4 years, and it was always very fun.
I'm sure it was. I don't know, like, what I would do at one of those, because I'm not extremely extroverted, so
just, like,
I think I would just walk around and feel really awkward.
I mean, it is important if you're going to a convention, you should, unless you, like, have something that you have to do there, you should go with friends, because, like, otherwise, like, you're just going to be walking around by yourself. Like, yeah, you can meet people there and, like, sometimes, you know, like, forge lifelong bonds. But, like, for the most part, going to a convention by yourself is not really, it's not really very fun because you end up overthinking things and not being as open to trying to join things with other people because you don't have, like, I don't know, backup. Or maybe I'm just codependent. I think these both of these things can be true.
Yeah. I have so many normies in my life. I don't want to have to explain these things to them.
That's like, true.
I can't be like, hey, Heather, you want to go to a brony convention? And she would be like, no, but I'm going to tell everybody I know that you asked me that. And I'd be like, oh, no, I have to get a new job now.
Well, as we saw on my Twitter account recently, all I had to do was set up a brony meetup group in my local area, and I met people, so... But that was in, like, 2012, 2013.
I have too many spicy opinions about that show that I just don't see that working. Because I'd show up and be like, yeah, Fluttershy sucks. And then everyone would either leave or hit me and then leave.
Well, I was the leader of the group. So, like, they had no choice. Like, they had to abide by my spicy opinions and who I favored most in the group to be my friends.
Jean-Luc, I'm sorry we're still talking about this.
It's fine. I don't know. Jean-Luc's been to
comic conventions. It's not that different from anime conventions.
Comic conventions are way more normal, though. Like, if I was talking about going to one of those, I think people would be like, oh, I get that.
Most comic conventions are indistinguishable from anime conventions.
Generally. I would say the difference really starts to become more apparent when it comes to, like, bigger conventions. Yeah. Like, the bigger comic conventions are very different from your standard anime convention, but, like, there are even some pretty big anime conventions that border on that. But
it's like, just a bunch of people hawking shit and a bunch of weird nerds walking around.
You pay money like to go spend more money. That's what cons are. It's spending money.
And you do some clout chasing by meeting people who are, like, slightly more famous than you.
Yeah, so. I guess depending on the con. But yeah, like, this anime convention is going to be, like, not that different from the comic convention that I went to last weekend. Arguably, it's going to be a lot of the same crowd because, you know, regional area people do a lot of the same conventions. I will probably see plenty of familiar faces there.
Well, that's good.
Sure.
It's good to be back out in the world, seeing people.
Yeah, I did very well at the convention I did last month, so I'm hoping to see hopefully similar success at this one.
Gotta pump those Delta variant numbers up, baby.
Well, I actually, this convention is, you have to... If you don't want to wear a mask, you have to show, like, proof of your vaccination record, and they give you, like, a wristband to wear, like, in... Like, it doesn't necessarily, I guess, apply to all hotel areas, but, like, the convention areas, like, they have rules about, like, either you wear a mask or you show, like, your vaccination record or a, like... COVID negative test from the past 72 hours, but I'm still gonna wear a mask, and I even bought, like, a couple of, like, those plastic, sneeze guards, like, you see it, like, cashiers, like, a piece of plastic to put in front of the area on my booth that I'll be with, like, a little hole at the bottom where people can, like, slide their money, and I can slide their buttons with cartoon characters on them.
So this must be, like, fairly profitable for you to keep doing this, huh?
I mean, I at least manage to break even most of the time, which is, like, because it's fun, and getting to do it can generally give me some pocket money. Like, it's worth doing.
Sure.
You know, I wouldn't say that it's, like, mega profitable. Selling stuff online like Etsy and Redbubble and stuff is usually a little more profitable than, like, on the whole, than doing stuff in person, because you have a lot of, like, upfront costs, like the paying for the booth, paying for your hotel, paying for like all of your meals when you're staying, you know, when you're out of town somewhere and you can't just like cook to feed yourself. But like, you know, it's fun and I have fun doing it. So it's worth it in the end.
Yeah. I don't know, like, because I saw some of the stuff, like, you were putting together to sell, and my immediate thought was, like, man, if Emily had, like, a 3D printer and a small benchtop laser, you could really,
I'd be
like,
unstoppable!
Make some neat swag shit that I think people would want to buy.
Yeah, I mean,
that's been
be
a thing at work, right, trying to get a piece of artwork etched into metal with the laser, and which still hasn't happened, and the testing has actually not worked, so I'm glad I haven't invested any money in material. But I know there are materials that, because the laser at work is like 200 watt, most of the stuff we're working with is supposed to be cut on like a 60 watt laser, so it's just melting the shit out of it. But
Well, also, some of the stuff that I showed you is not even primarily the stuff that I sell. That was just like a new fun, like, little side project that I decided to try doing. I mostly, it's me and my, you know, my friend Lou, Chad.
Yeah.
They and I, like, collectively sell our art under, like, a single sort of storefront. And so I've just got a bunch of, like, buttons and art prints and stickers. Mostly stickers. A lot of stickers because they're $3 or 2 for $5. Everybody loves the 2 for $5, so I sell lots of stickers. And they're nice stickers too. They're like, I have like some of them on my car and they've lasted for a long time. So
I take, because if you could take like cartoon characters people like, anime stuff, scenes people like, and then etch that into metal, you could probably sell those. I doubt there's a lot of that going on, because like there's a startup cost to buying a laser and then having the software to raster the image properly so it looks good and whatnot. But when it works, it looks really, really good. There's a reason why I want this like picture done, so I can put it on my wall.
Well, I even have a friend that sells like custom bath products, like nerdy themed bath products, and she has invested in a 3D printer so that she can make her own molds.
Oh,
so
sure.
She can make like custom bath bombs and stuff, and that is very lucrative from what I can tell, and it looks very good.
3D printers are cool because like they're getting kind of cheaper as time goes on. Like eventually I think you're gonna be able to get a decent one for a few hundred bucks.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, like, in comparison to how it used to be, it is much, much more affordable now for people to get, like, even a small 3D printer, but not in my budget.
Yeah. I know there's one, a guy at work in IS has that it prints, he has a router bit, and I think he has a laser bit, and I'm pretty sure the whole thing cost him, like, $5,000 to $8,000. So, I mean, expensive, right? But if you can turn a profit on it, if you're making stuff to sell or you just have like a lot of hobbies that would involve that, like you can justify it over the course of X amount of years.
Yeah, my wacky tabacky salesman has a 3D printer and he uses it to make like out of print Warhammer and other tabletop sort of figurine based, like he makes like environments and uses like files from like out of print stuff that they don't make anymore. I don't really know all the gists of it because I just know what I've overheard in conversation, but it's very funny.
Sure.
So, John, you didn't do anything this week?
No, I pretty much just worked.
Were you going to watch a movie earlier? Did you watch a movie?
I was going to go see Escape Room, but
right,
I did not,
okay.
So I didn't get to it. I read some comics that we can talk about we've hit half an hour.
We are exactly at half an hour now.
Yeah, just fucking absolutely brilliant timing on my part. and your guys' part, so good job, everybody. We made it to the halfway point. Now we're going to talk about comic books. Unless anybody has anything else. There weren't like a ton of comic books, but I feel like we say that a lot, and then we spend a lot of time talking
about comics. Well, we say that, anyway, and then so. We spend 10 minutes talking about one comic.
So, do we want to continue the cringe conversation and talk about My Little Pony number 100?
Yes. I mean, I didn't read that shit, but go ahead.
I mean, I did. So, yes, I do. I mean, Chad, what did you think?
I was a little concerned going in that we would be, like, starting halfway through some kind of series, mm-hmm. which it looks like we are. I did not go back and read the issues before.
Yeah,
this.
It doesn't seem... I don't know how far in we are, but it's definitely not the beginning.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, the way this handled exposition, which wasn't super elegantly, but I got the gist of what was going on. Like, it's like, okay, yeah. They're here for this reason. This is the bad guy thing, and we're going forward with this. There's certain things that, like, the two friends actually being the ones who love each other, and that's going to be the harmony thing, like, immediately called that as soon as they are both on screen together.
Oh, for sure.
You know, like the Raven being the bad guy, of fucking course. We all saw that a mile coming. Like, yeah. It's still very much a kid's book. The new villains are kind of neat, because I've seen that character design in some of the Daring Do stuff, and so
yeah.
That's fun. I don't know. Like, it was kind of cute. I like how Lyra and Bon Bon are just, like, fucking spies canonically now because of episode 100 where you know, like, that was such a stupid joke, but like, no, we're gonna run with that. They're
no, it's excellent. 10 out of 10, no need to change.
And they're just so,
I like
this
issue,
stupidly badass in this. it just don't care, like, half the time too. Like, they're such a weird set of background characters that, like, the fandom has done so much for, and now the actual comic books are kind of rolling with. And
I did a Lyra cosplay one time. Did I ever tell you that?
Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't a big thing. Like, I got, like, a wig, and I had a shirt with, like, her cutie mark on it, and, like, a seafoam green cardigan, and, like, some khaki pants.
Sure.
I had a Lyra with me that I would later go on to date for obviously unrelated reasons. But it was fun. I liked this issue of My Little Pony. I liked seeing Andy Price's art again, because I really love the way that he does My Little Pony, and I wasn't sure that he was still attached to the My Little Pony comic. And that definitely, reading this made me nostalgic for back in the Brony heyday when I was actually reading My Little Pony comics regularly. And I don't know, like, the way that it left off at the end, I might even pick up the next issue to see how this is gonna resolve.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious, especially because, like, this is neat stuff with the lore that I know the show tried to do lore stuff.
Yeah,
it was like super hit or miss, but this was neat. There's a lot of good jokes in the background.
Yes.
I love, like, the volume 32 of Celestia's secrets and Luna's little known facts. And one of them is just, like, that cookie recipe.
Mm-hmm.
And those little hints that have always been in these comics are kind of why they're really fun to read.
Yes.
Because they really reward you for paying attention.
Yes.
Also, the panel layouts in this are really good. Like,
yeah.
There's some really fucking awesome dynamic, like, action scenes and movement. The lettering is really solid, considering how much fucking talking there is in the front half of it.
Yeah, like, in comparison to some other books that we had this week, like, even though there was a lot of text in this, like, I really didn't feel, like, as text-heavy as it could have.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, it was cute. It's kind of nice going back. It's been a while since I've read a MLP comic, and it's like, oh yeah, the good ones are usually pretty good, and
yeah,
this was a good one. John Luke, what would you like to talk about next?
I should have come with an answer prepared. Joker number 5, that came out this week. I'm sad Alex isn't here, because Alex is, like, the Francesco Francavilla fan of the show. I mean, I also really love Francesca Francavilla, and we do not get enough Francavilla interiors. So that was a really nice surprise, opening that up this week to find, I think, the first interiors that he's done in maybe years at this point. So the book looked absolutely gorgeous. I think, like, for especially for this issue, for like the flashback, you know, sort of kind of like a period piece, this very clearly takes place, you know, there's no determined time frame, but clearly, you know, in sort of in that like heightened early 20th century era that the Batman comes from.
Yeah.
And it's got all of the like, and Francavilla's art is just so like it. Everything just has like a great noir tinge to it. So moody. And he draws redheads really well, which is perfect for Gordon. Just makes the all the pages pop. So just an absolutely gorgeous book. Just so many amazing panels. I love the way that he draws Joker as well. Very simple. Very different than from the Joker we see now, who is increasingly like wacky and crazy looking.
Yeah,
this guy just like looks like a normal dude with green hair and white face, and just, you know, a little paler than normal.
Yeah,
so I love that. I'm a sucker for Francavilla's art style. In terms of the writing itself, I thought this was another really strong issue. The last one, I think collectively we weren't super high on the last one.
Wasn't my favorite.
Yeah, but I thought this issue was fantastic. I love the way that, you know. Like, this is the first time the Joker's ever committed a crime in Gotham, and he's immediately inside Gordon's head, which is knowing what we know about their relationship and seeing their dynamic.
What was the last one?
So the last one, Alex and I talked about this earlier because I also couldn't remember. But the last one was the big exposition dump issue. It was, a lot of it was from, not from the POV of Joker or Gordon, it was from the POV, or POVs rather, of the characters hunting down the Joker. So there was the Bane heiress character, who the first half of the issue was from her POV. And then there was that long scene at the end with the Joker sort of exposition dumping to Gordon. And that there was like a little, the one thing I think that we sort of came away liking, or at least that I came away liking, was the Barbara Gordon, Cassie Kane, Stephanie Brown stuff, where they're doing the detective work trying to figure out who the Court of Owls lady was.
Yeah.
So there was kind of
I don't remember any of this.
There was that
scene. Is that the one where they ended and like he found the Joker and then he's like, "We're all gonna die. Here's a gun." Or is that?
Oh, no. That was issue three, I think. That was issue two or issue three. The end of this one was like they were. It's them by like the burning trash can. Joker and Gordon talking to each other. So it was not, as it turns out, a very memorable issue. But I think this issue was right at the ship.
Oh yeah, this is pretty fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I like this issue.
The idea of there's like people that are there at the right time or people there at the wrong time, and like I believe that, but also Gotham is only wrong time. Like it's very clever, and the stuff, you know, Gordon was doing that and the effects it had on the people around him. And you have a hindsight, and you're like, no, Gordon's right. This guy's dangerous, and he's going to escape Arkham and fuck the town up some more, because that's what he does. But no one else knows that yet, because like you said, Joker was like really early in his career, just beginning his criminal career. And yeah, like that, it was... There's compelling stuff here. I feel like the, like you said, the crime noir stuff, the coloring, the artwork, like it all really helped sell the package. Like, it was really captivating in ways that, like, Batman comics don't normally be.
Yeah, it's very, Francavilla like is very good at the sort of like homage to other genres and the past. Very like very very strong artist. I wish he would do more interiors, but yeah, no, I think it's really the series is way less about the Joker and more just about the tragedy of Jim Gordon as a character.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this it's always something that's sort of been in the background of a lot of Batman comics, but at least to my knowledge, not something that's been explored in a whole lot of depth before, at least not in anything I've read. But you sort of always get this in the background that, like, all of the consequences that, you know, you would think would happen to Batman end up happening to Jim Gordon, where, like, he's the one who loses people he loves. He's the one who, like, throws his life away for this cause that he believes in. And you know, just can never quite get it together in a way that is, you know, ultimately really, really tragic. And that's sort of where this issue ends, where he, you know, he was all night, you know, watching the Joker, making sure the Joker didn't escape, and nobody believes him. And of course, like, the Joker doesn't escape on his watch, but, you know, he was supposed to be in a sting operation that goes horribly wrong. His wife leaves him with the kids. It's just, you see his life just sort of falling apart. And it's really powerful, I think, and really, really affecting.
It's cool to see, like, good stories still coming out of Batman characters, because this stuff has been around for so long, and there's a certain point where it's like, clearly they have to have done, like, every Batman story except the really stupid ones that I come up with. And it's like, oh no, this probably has been done somewhere else before, but it there's such a good core emotional hook to it that, like, I'm along for the ride, especially since the artwork and the writing and stuff have been really solid.
Yeah, and this
except
was
the last issue, apparently.
Yeah, the last issue was rough, but this is Tinian, and also it's co-written by Matthew Rosenberg, who has done a bunch of other stuff. I don't know. I think a lot of the Matt Rosenberg stuff I've read sort of predates this show. It was a lot of Black Mask stuff, like Four Kids Walk Into a Bank and stuff like that. But co-wrote this, and I think it has some of that more, like, gritty writing that he, like, kind of specializes in as well, so. Just like getting an assist on the art, getting an assist on the writing, just a really good way to write the shit.
Yeah.
Good fucking issue. Speaking of clowns, I think this is the last issue of Ha Ha.
Is it? Six is kind of a weird issue number.
Six is pretty normal for,
I guess, maybe
for a miniseries. I should double check that before I say stuff like that. But yeah, so this is number 6 of 6.
Didn't so, love it.
No?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it just... This one was kind of a little too much of a bummer.
It is a bummer. It's
I
also...
didn't think it was bad. I was just sort of like,
It also has a two-page sequence, and we sort of talked about the, like, Jokerification stuff with the first issue.
Yeah.
But literally, they drew Joaquin Phoenix into this issue.
Yeah.
Martin Morazzo does a really good job drawing a Joaquin Phoenix. It's just really weird seeing, like, kind of an inverted version of a scene from Joker 2019.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing that's compelling about this is that Maxwell Prince actually does a much better job of delivering what I think the, like, thesis of that movie was, which ended up being, like, very, very muddled in its execution. But I think that, like, over the course of these six issues, like, this is something I think we picked up on in the first issue, but it's very much about these people who are, like, they sort of just happen to be clowns, but they're people who are, like, beaten down by capitalism and by the sort of, like, neoliberal hell world that they live in. And it's just driven them to the absolute edge. And this is definitely starts off as another one of those. But I think where this ends is actually less in line with the first. Even though the first half of this feels very much like it was ripped straight from the first issue. Like, oh, this guy's
like
a clown.
Two sides of the same coin.
Right. But whereas the guy in the clown in the first issue, you know, his wife left him. He's pathetic. He is, you know, can't make any money, can't make ends meet. And so he ends it off in, like, a kind of funny, like, you know, shoot it up, you know, fuck it kind of way. This guy, like, he goes to shoot himself at the end and he does kill himself. But the last few pages I thought were a really affecting sequence of, like, the time from when he pulls the trigger and the bullet first enters his skull to him, and the, like, last few seconds of his life where he sort of has a realization and sees the world as it really is, and that, you know, things can be better. And I thought that that was really, like, really, really poignant, because this issue plays around with, like, him being an unreliable narrator. So there's, like, a whole sequence in the middle where, like, people are getting killed in the streets and the neighborhood is burning down and everything seems to be going wrong. And it just sort of turns out to have been, well, at least my interpretation of it, of the end, is that it's, you know, it's not real. That's just how that was his sort of perception of reality. And he sort of has that, those last few seconds of his life are, like, almost the happiest moments of his life in a way. And not because he's dying, but because he sees the world for what it really is. And I think that that is a really powerful ending, especially to a series that, like, has sort of fluctuated from being very nihilistic and, like, sort of edgelordy to being, I think, fairly, like, life-affirming and, you know, optimistic. So I think this ended it off really well. Chad, I don't know, I think you dropped this, but there is an ice cream man bit in here as well.
Oh, really?
The ice cream truck from Ice Cream Man makes an appearance as, like, the inciting incident for him going insane and seeing and hallucinating. So I thought that was, you know, kind of a nice touch, since Maxwell Prince also, I think, is the artist on Ice Cream Man. I don't remember if he draws it or if he writes it. I think he might also be the writer.
I believe he is.
Okay, yeah. But I thought you might appreciate that, even if you're, you know, not reading this anymore.
I didn't...
Yeah, that's kind of fun.
I will say, even though, like, I didn't love this issue, I don't think it was bad. I think it was just a little too much of a downer for how, sure, I was feeling when I read it. It was just really sad, and in a way that left me like, oh, like, I don't know, it I didn't enjoy it, but that doesn't mean it was bad. It just,
no,
maybe,
yeah,
it was,
no, absolutely. I mean, it is not, definitely, yeah, it is sad. It's not like the last few issues,
very,
which are
sad.
Yeah, it's not like the last few issues, which have definitely ended on a high note with, like, you know, the old lady, you know, sort of.
Oh, I still need to make her fucking cauliflower casserole. You do. I will do that next week. Like, honestly, I really will. I'm not gonna. Okay, not next week. The week that I will be coming back, because I will not, yeah, be on next week's episode, but the following week, I will make the cauliflower casserole as specified in, what was it, haha number
5.
5, yeah. Yep. I will make the cauliflower and bell pepper casserole and let everyone know how it is.
Nice.
Because I like, yeah, cauliflower, so I imagine it'll probably be pretty good.
Cauliflower is pretty solid. Yeah, I don't know. This is, at least for me, this has really turned into kind of a standout series. I mean, those first two issues are still pretty rough, but
I definitely think that this is an interesting little series.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I feel like I'm glad that I stuck through it and made it past that second issue, because, yeah, I feel like there's a point where I wouldn't have, because there's been a lot of really good stuff here. And I mean, the end of this issue is sad, or most of this issue is sad.
I remember not liking the last issue that came out. I don't remember why, but I feel like,
yeah,
I,
you didn't like that one at the time. You didn't, not Alex and it. I, Alex and I really liked it. You didn't,
yeah,
did not.
But on the whole, I have liked Ha Ha, so, like, I'm, you know, I'm game for, like, a weird little anthology series about clowns, even if I didn't love every issue of it. Like, I think it was a neat concept, and I think that they have executed it in an interesting way, in a compelling way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like if fills the void of Joker 2019.
I like that we've gotten a couple of anthology series this year, if we want to,
yeah,
segue into Silver Coin.
Do you actually, honestly, I'm going to say, I think Ha Ha has been stronger than Silver Coin after these last two issues.
You know, probably, but I actually liked this issue this time.
Oh, man.
It's Papa Lemire.
I know. I feel kind of bad because this is the Jeff Lemire issue, and like I thought a lot of it was fine. Like, it was enjoyable. I love the scene where she like, where the main character who finds the coin, has wires come out of her eyes and go into and hack into another guy's eyes and drain his bank account.
Dude, they're not even wires.
Yeah, they're way more like
they're
organic.
Techno worms.
Yes, that was really gnarly and really sick. And like, there's a chase scene that follows that is pretty enjoyable. But this issue just goes absolutely
It doesn't really do much. There wasn't really that much going on, but I thought that some of the world building was kind of cool, and like, it definitely was not what I expected out of an issue of Silver Coin at all. Like, in terms of the setting and everything.
Yeah, I mean, I just, like, the series had such promises, like an anthology series about, let's do these, like, neat little monkey's paw stories.
Yeah.
And all of them are, like, sort of these self-contained little things that have, like, a beginning and a middle and an end and a very clear conclusion. And this one just, like, has a beginning and a middle. And honestly, it doesn't even really have a middle. It mostly just has a cold open. And then it just sort of ends.
I don't know.
There's no real story here. I didn't really make any use of the concept in any way that's meaningful. I mean, she finds the coin and it influences her to maybe make her be more competent than she would be otherwise. But
honestly, I even barely registered that the coin was involved in all this.
I mean, yeah, she just like, there's that bit where she falls down. Like, she goes off the ledge and falls into, like, the sunken city, which that is cool. Like, I like the idea of, all of the cities are, like, basically subterranean now because they were flooded. And so the new cities were built on top, like, literally on top of the old cities. Like, that is cool. I would read a Jeff Lemire book that was about that, but this is not really about, like, there's a bunch of compelling stuff here, but it's not... Like, it's not like that's any of the things are that take center stage, right? So you're really sort of left, I think, mostly being carried by Michael Walsh's art, which, fair enough. I mean, Michael Walsh is a phenomenal artist.
Great.
Like, it looks beautiful. It looks gorgeous. Yeah, like, there's some really sick cyberpunk stuff here. But, and so, you know, that's almost enough of a reason on its own. It's just that the plot is just kind of nothing, which is unfortunate because I felt that way about the last issue too.
I didn't love the last issue, but I had an enjoyable time reading this, even though I didn't really feel like it amounted to anything. I thought it was just sort of cool enough on the face of it that
that's fair. That's fair. Chad, did you read this, or were you just done with this book after the second issue?
No, I've been reading this one. I mostly agree with you, Jean-Luc. I think this story works really well until it remembers it has to involve the coin and then end in one issue.
Yeah.
If it had been two issues and actually done something with kind of, like you said, the monkey paw themes, or it gets her out of a jam, but at a cost, like... It abruptly ends, and it's trying to hint at something, and I don't know if I totally picked up what, but, like, the sci-fi world, the dystopia was really cool, the body horror was really cool, I like the chase scene, it went on maybe a little too long, considering there was no real payoff to any of it, but it was just so weird to be like, I want Lemire to write a book in this world, but not have anything to do with what happened in this story. Like you said, there's this...
I don't disagree.
There's the good
with
Jeff
that.
Lemire stuff, and then there's the Silver Coin stuff that has not really been good except the very first issue.
I think I liked the second issue.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
the minority.
No, I also defended the second issue. I enjoyed the second issue. But yeah, I mean, this is just, you know, kind of a bummer. I mean, I would read a Jeff Lemire and Michael Walsh. I would read this exact creative team writing a book in this world, and I would probably love it. But this is unfortunately not that.
Yeah.
A couple other things. New issue of Die came out, which, you know, it's another issue of Die.
I feel like we got very close in this issue of Die to our main character coming out as trans, and
saying it.
Yeah, that well, that's what I mean. Okay. Like, arguably, yeah, like the it's written on the page, but like not specifically to the other people in the party.
Yeah.
Is more what I meant by that.
Sure, yeah. No, I fucking love this issue. I love that I really reveal like this of, like, issue. The moment where she hesitates, like, because mm-hmm. it's also interesting because we haven't seen, since the first issue, I believe, we haven't seen the younger versions of these characters when they were trapped in Die the first time.
Yeah.
And so this issue opens with them, like, as soon as they were out of Die, which that is also, like, it's compelling to see them, you know, dealing with that trauma in the real world.
Yeah.
But then getting that flashback to the moment where Ash, like, hesitates and basically causes the predicament that they're in right now.
Yeah.
Because, you know, because being in Die allows her to be who she is in a way she can't be in the real world is really... really fucking poignant. Like, that shit really stuck with me. I thought that it was mm-hmm. absolutely phenomenal and really, really well executed. And the way that, like, everything just sort of comes back to that as the issue goes on.
Yeah.
Was just, I don't know. I think Kieran Gillen did a really great job with that. There's a lot of, like, sort of expositing in here, too, about Sol's past that I found was, like, that flowed super well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Kieran Gillen, like, the way that he's able to, like, maneuver that into something that's actually compelling to read and not just a bunch of text boxes.
Yeah.
Is
Yeah,
is
there was a lot of admirable. Reading in this book, but, like, honestly, like, it was also fucking good. Like, I mean, can't even complain.
Yeah, like, it's so good. I mean, there are even pages that, like, I would argue work so well without the text as well. I mean, there's a sequence on, it's page 19, where there's, like, a three-panel sequence in the middle of, like, Sol looking at Ash, and Ash, like, sort of crying, mm-hmm. and then trying to comfort him, and just, like, it's such a powerful series of panels on its own, and then you, like, layer Gillen's prose over it, and it, like, is just as good. Which is not something that you could say about most
not
comics.
Not usually how that goes.
Yeah, with, like, really, really strong art, you generally just want to let it breathe. And, I mean, credit to, I think, Clayton Cowles is the letterer on this. Like, big credit to him for, like, making the text as unintrusive as possible as well. So that, you know, the focus is never off of the art, right? Like, it's always the artist sort of center. Yeah. No, I thought this was, like just... I feel like Ash's whole character arc has been really compelling, and seeing her here being, like, actually vulnerable, like, just down to, like, the way that Stephanie Hans draws her, where she's, like, really sort of retreating into herself, I think is really just so good. There's so much shit about this issue that I really loved.
I mean, this whole book, like, is pretty much every episode, every time this is on topic, it's just, like, Die fucking slaps, because it always fucking slaps.
It's just always good.
Yeah, but this issue in particular I also thought was just, like, really good, and I don't know, maybe it's just because it's been a month since the last issue of Die, and it's always a breath of fresh fucking air to read something so good, but, like, yeah. Definitely one of the standouts among, like, the stuff that I read this week.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Chad?
Yeah, it's another one of those, like, everything you said is true, like, there's so much writing and words in this one, but I don't mind because I like the characters so much, I like the concepts, I like the play on D&D and fantasy RPGs and things like that, where, you know, the last arc, we're in a dungeon, we're finally doing a dungeon crawl, and there's no bad guys, they're just... They have to deal with the silence and their own bullshit. And they brought in a lot of their own bullshit because the characters are, like, really, really kind of beat up at this point, right? They've had to face a lot of stuff. And Ash, like, hesitating before and it causing a lot of this. But it made so much sense. And I don't know, it made me think, too, of, like, when I was playing, like, World of Warcraft a lot. And, like, you get to know the world so well, and you're powerful in that world, and it just, like, you understand so much stuff. We're like, yeah, I guess if I had to get, like, stuck in World of Warcraft, I'd probably do okay because I get it. And the rules are slightly different, and there's not, like, you know, just kind of thinking about it based on the RPGs I've played and really gotten sucked into. And there are different ways to, you know, relate to these characters through that I've really enjoyed as the series has gone on. And so you can tell that Kieran, like, put a ton of thought into the game design element of RPGs and tabletop games before creating this. And I really appreciate that amount of, like, love and affection for the genre.
We should play a session in the Die RPG. You, Chad, you, me, John, and Alex.
Yeah, I mean, it exists, right? Like, you can.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like,
it's like all the in the back matter.
So. It exists. Chad, be our dungeon master. I feel like of the four of us, you are the most equipped to be a dungeon master based on just our general skills. Maybe.
Probably.
In the hierarchy, I would say, like, you, Jean-Luc, and then I feel like Alex and I are tied. I don't know. Alex probably has more D&D experience than me, so, like, he probably... I probably am dead last, but, like...
I feel like I'm probably actually dead last because I'm really fucking bad at improv. So I would come with something I thought was really cool prepared.
As the dungeon master.
No, I know. But, like, I feel like the dungeon master has to be the best at improv when you're playing D&D. Because they have to respond to everything that the players are doing, right?
Yeah, but...
So...
I don't know. I feel like you could roll with it. Like...
Maybe.
It would depend on, like, you know, like, the situation, I guess.
Yeah. It put me out of my comfort zone, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. Cool.
But yeah, we should do that.
We should do that, I think. That would be fun. That would have been a good thing to do for episode 250, actually, but...
No. Well, I'm sure we'll have other milestones. Are always more numbers.
Yeah, exactly. The thing about numbers is that they're infinite, so we can do another one. Did you guys read anything else this week?
I read Six Sidekicks of Trigger Keaton.
Yeah, I did not.
Oh, I know that some of us were not big on the first issue, which, you know, that's
just
fine.
Me.
Well, I knew that you didn't like it. I can remember. How everyone else felt about it, but I actually liked this issue better than the first issue. Okay. There was, like, a cool, like, chase sequence in the middle. I thought some of the jokes were funnier. I don't really care that much about the whole central, like, conceit of the story, which is supposedly finding out who killed Trigger Keaton. I couldn't give less of a shit who killed Trigger Keaton. I'm just interested in, like, this motley crew of former sidekicks and their weird investigation into who killed this man. Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was fun. I will probably be back for the next issue. Chad, did you read this?
Yeah.
What'd you think?
I thought it was... There's a lot of good, like, humor to this. I really like... Like you said, I don't actually care who killed Trigger Keaton.
Not at all.
Not, like, unhappy that he's dead because he was an asshole. It's fun to continue to see how much of an asshole he was.
Yeah.
We're just like... You know, here's my last will. I'm giving the stuff to the people I work with.
Yeah.
It's just a letter that says, fuck you, Paul.
Oh, that was so good. The handing out of the last will stuff was really good.
It was really funny. The chase scene is kind of fun. I don't like some of, like, the cartooniness there. Like,
yeah.
I feel like there would be, like, major consequences to that chase scene that we probably won't see because it is a cartoon. But the characters are so awkward and weird, and they get along really well despite kind of not liking each other.
They have, like,
so
kind
just,
of a weird, funky dynamic that I'm kind of
yeah.
enamored with.
And so I'm really down to continue just with that. I like the art style a lot. Like, it's just such a pleasant, cute comic to look at, despite some of the vulgarities. The ending with like the Reddit threads is really funny.
Yeah,
like,
I was charmed by the inclusion of the Reddit threads. Oh yeah, I'm gonna definitely pick up next issue or read it. And picking up implies that I have gone out and gotten a physical item, which rest assured I have not done. But I like this comic, so I'm probably gonna read the next issue.
Yeah, you guys read Batman the Detective number 4?
I didn't know you were still reading this. I did read it, yes.
I don't remember if I read the last issue because I don't remember what was going on.
You know, I don't think you did. Because Alex and I think when we talked about it, it was just Alex and I talking about it. I mean, what did you think? Did you enjoy it or?
It has a lot of weird Batman bullshit that I don't like.
Yeah.
Like, he gets poisoned and he's like, okay, I have to slow down my heart. And when the cops leave, I will break out of the restraints, the handcuffs, and then I will walk to a pharmacy and I will start just eating the right pills because I know exactly what I need to not die. Also, I am Batman. I have lots of money and have plans for everything. And it's like, I don't care at all. Some of this stuff was kind of compelling. Like, there are elements, like, I finished it. But
yeah, that says something. You don't always do that.
No. There's a Dark Horse comic I got, like, 3 pages into, and I was like, fuck this shit. Yeah, fuck that.
Oh, God, I could not finish Savage Hearts. That was fucking awful.
I could not get through that.
So,
which,
you know,
I was kind of disappointed because, like, the writer, Aubrey something.
Citizen.
Yeah. He was, like, fired from G.I. Joe for being too leftist on Twitter or some bullshit several years ago. I don't remember the extent of the drama. I just was like, why do I recognize that name? So I Googled it and kind of back pieced together that was the G.I. Joe guy. So I was, like, a little interested in how this was going to go, but God, no, I did not enjoy Savage Hearts.
The writer of Worst Dudes.
Oh, yeah, I must have totally forgot because I tried to read, issue 2 of Worst Dudes and also just did not vibe with it.
Yeah, I mean, what he's doing to a degree is compelling, which is like, you know, he's trying to like write in the style of like Silver Age pulp, but like fill it with vulgarity and subvert it in that way.
Yeah,
and it's interesting in conceit. It just, this especially feels like Chad, when the Worst Dudes number 1 came out, said that it felt like it was trying too hard, and this definitely had that vibe of just like really trying to be something and kind of falling flat. But
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I got to page 3 and I was like, this comic is ugly as hell. And all the characters are swearing, but it's censored. And so I'm just seeing, like, scrolling and just seeing all of these censored curse words. And I was like, wow, these characters are swearing way too much. I don't care. I hate this. Like, this is stupid. I have better things to do.
Also, I'm pretty sure Dark Horse, like, doesn't always censor swear words. But
no,
I feel like, yeah, it's a little inconsistent. On the art thing, to get back to Batman the Detective, this is the first issue where Andy Kubert's art has really gotten on my nerves. I'm not like an Andy Kubert fan, but I feel like it's worked before. But that whole detective scene, Bruce Wayne is just so bulky and goofy looking. It's just, it's so hard to take it seriously. But when he's like sweating that profusely, it's just, it feels comedic, more than anything else. So I don't know. Was not a big fan of this issue. I enjoyed the first few issues of this. But this was not a great issue.
I think there's something kind of neat about the idea of, like, Batman saves all these people, and, like, that is being turned against him, and someone is specifically trying to kill the people he saved.
Oh, yeah.
He's like,
I
remember everybody, and it's like, fuck off, Batman, you piece of shit.
Well, I don't even know if it's, like, I mean, like, it implies that he remembers everybody, which is stupid, but, like, he also has a database of everybody that he's saved, which is a very Batman thing to do of, like, being a just total fucking unhinged narcissist. and, you know, just tracking and quantifying the amount of good that he's done in the world. So I like that aspect of it, but I really thought that the mystery aspect of the last couple issues with Ducard was way more exciting than, you know, anything that happened in this issue.
Mm-hmm.
But oh, that'll do it for comics this week, I think. That was just about everything.
Yeah.
I didn't read anything else, at least. So.
Nope.
Cool. Well, we can go ahead and call it there. You can find us online at Comics Podcast on Twitter and Facebook to get updates and all that good stuff. You can find us individually on Twitter. Chad is at Dual Wield Soft. I am at Mountain Dew Liker. Emily is at MPandanata. And Alex is at Alex Hanziak. You can find other stuff that we do. Chad, you can find his short stories at anonym.wordpress.com. You can find his books on Amazon. If you just look up his name, Chad Waller, you will find books there that you can buy that he's written. You can check out his Bandcamp, anonym.bandcamp.com, I-N-O-N-U-M. Emily's got some other podcasts you can check out. Imagine Me and Yuri Kuma, which is an anime podcast, I'm told. Don't listen to it. And The Fresh Podcast Market, also an anime podcast, but I do listen to that one.
Less of an anime podcast than yes. It has been sometimes.
That's, yes. Recently... Less anime talk. Two thumbs up.
More well-rounded content.
Yep.
From me and Teresa.
More positive response from me, the less anime there is on that podcast. That's just my opinion.
That just means I'll have to bring more anime into this podcast. Because, Chad, don't forget, we're getting Yashahime Season 2.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so you can look forward to us talking about that in the future if you want. I don't know why.
If you want to listen to that interview I did or watch it, it is a Couples Therapy VR is the name of the YouTube channel.
Check it out.
That is a really funny name.
It's a really good channel. Name.
Couples Therapy VR. I'm checking this out. But anyway, you can check all that shit out. You can check us out when we come back next week for an episode of the pod. It will be a 3-person pod again. So, to look forward to
Comics
that.
Podcast classic.
Alex 2, and then, you know, we'll have to kick Invent a Reason that we kicked Emily off. but yeah, I will talk to you all next week.
Bye, everybody.